Hey, everybody, welcome back to the sixth round post-fight show with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Eddie Mercado. Coming to y'all after the close of UFC Vegas 88, Tuivasa versus Tybura. A gratefully short heavyweight fight, because those boys, if that had gotten into round three, wouldn't have wanted to see it.
I mean, I'm glad Tybura found the finish, and it wasn't five rounds of him just laying on Tuivasa. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. First and foremost, I get to do some crowing, because I was one of the only people on the not former staff. It says staff picks still on the Substack over for Bloody Elbow, but the former staff.
They should change it to STAPH, like the infection. Yeah.
our old staff picks, but I was one of the only people. And the poll I ran, and like just seeing like the general sort of conversation online and all that, I was one of the only people out there picking Marcin Tybura going into this.
So I picked Tuivasa, got me, but yeah, yeah. I picked him because, like, typically this is who Tybura loses to. Someone who can come out and just let his hands go and be powerful. And unfortunately, for Tuivasa, he overextended, got taken down, and it wasn't even that he overextended. He just kind of bit really hard on a feint and got taken down for it.
I mean,
never got back up.
The thing is, the guys that Tybura loses to actually are guys who can stay calm and like keep fighting for multiple rounds. Often, like occasionally, he gets like blasted early by, like, you know, Tom Aspinall or Augusto Sakai, of all people. But usually, like, people have to go multiple rounds with Marcin Tybura, and there are wins over guys like Walt Harris out there who can go out and put it on people early, where they look a lot like this, where Tybura almost always gets busted up early in fights. But he's really good at, if you're bringing a fight to him, that tends to be the point where his wrestling game works the best. If you're getting chaotic and messy, that's where he has the chance to start making takedowns. Because he's not a really good shot wrestler on his own. If you're out being, you know, if Tai Tuivasa had just gone out and like low kicked Tybura for a couple of rounds and jabbed him, he probably...
Think about what you just said, though.
This is why I did not pick Tai Tuivasa.
Yeah, yeah.
If he'd just gone out there for a couple of rounds and just kind of picked at him, Tybura probably wouldn't have gotten anything going at all. But he's going to go out there and he's going to put it on this, because Tybura gives off big bullyable, for a huge dude, he gives off very like bullying victim energy. You know, it's just the sort of like what you see, like, yeah, but everybody's going to pick on you, of course. Like, and so dudes go out there and they just are like, I am going to hurt this man. I'm not going to let him just like bob around with his arm in front of his face and like the weird pawing jab he has, the sort of jerky, like seesaw motion that he had. Like, no, you're just going to go out there and blast him. And when you do that, if you're not a really good fighter, he finds a way to grab onto you and pull you to the mat. And then the real thing, the thing that I get to really throw in everybody's face, most particularly yours, because you choose to talk to me voluntarily, is that Tai Tuivasa is one of, or that Marcin Tybura is one of the only heavyweights out there that has an actual back take game. The dude finds his way to the back and he's good at it. And Tai Tuivasa stuck on the mat, is he going to give his back up?
100%.
100%.
Yeah. I thought maybe he'd be able to just stand up Derek Lewis style if it did happen.
He's never been that guy. He's never been calm enough. Like Derek Lewis, that's the thing, is he gets on his back and he just shuts down. He's just like, okay, you think you can submit me, bet. I will just stay here.
Tui Vasa tried that.
He did.
He's belly down and just getting fucking dinked.
Yeah.
He's like looking up, just like.
He tried it for a minute, but.
And there wasn't much defense to that choke either.
Yeah.
Kind of put his arms down and was like, fuck it.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I mean, you know, that's the thing that gets Derek Lewis caught too, that like. It, being passive works really well when your opponent can't like hold on to you and like make something happen. But Marcin Tybura is just, he's not that bad a grappler, you know?
No, especially for heavyweight, this yeah. heavyweight division.
So, yeah, I hate to see this happen to Tai Tuivasa. This was a bad fight to take. This is a bad place to take. Like, you are one of the most like crowd pop fighters out there. I get that he probably just wanted a fight and needed a fight and needed a paycheck. And they're like, hey, we've got a headlining spot for you, but it's at the Apex. And he was like, okay, fine.
And like you were saying earlier, Tybura looks beatable.
He does look beatable. He is a fighter that people just think, I can beat this guy. But now he's lost four straight fights, and this one is going to feel, in hindsight, like kind of a waste of Tai Tuivasa. You know,
we got like 15 to 30 seconds of excitement out of him.
Yeah,
at least there was that.
Yeah, well, the UFC's not going to get rid of him. He is a fan favorite, but yeah, like,
I hope they give him a Bobo. Give him a softball.
Well, see, now I just feel bad because I was going to say like, but they should match him up with like Walt Harris. But is then you said around? That. Heavyweight, is Walt Harris still in the UFC? I thought he was. He just seems to be like, yeah, he's still around. He got suspended for failed drug test until June.
Okay. Well, that shouldn't be a thing anymore.
Yeah, no kidding.
You saw OSP out there looking not even winded after that hard 15 minutes.
41-year-old OSP.
Yeah, coming forward with volume. Like, get the... I'm sure it's all on the up and up. I'm sure that new in-house drug testing is...
Hard-working vitamins, Eddie. Hard-working vitamins.
And prayers.
That's right.
Prayers.
But, yeah. So, Tuivasa, they need to give him... They could... A fight with Walt Harris would be pretty ideal. Fight with Marcos Rogério de Lima, although he does wrestle sometimes. That'd be pretty fun. Where's
Jorgen De Castro when you need him?
They did cut him.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, you're... Otherwise, you got... Yeah, it's just tough, because... I mean, Martin Boudet, there you go. That's the dude. 6'4". Slovakian.
Oh, he's the guy that got bombed on by that Gasanov guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I say that right, Gasanov?
Yeah.
The guy
Shamil Gaziev. Gaziev,
yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. There are fights for Tuivasa. They will find him a fight. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it sucks that it... losing to Marcin Tybura is not something that Tai Tuivasa needed at this point now.
That's a tough setback.
Yeah.
It's a reevaluating setback.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they can try to rebook that Rosenstrike fight for Tybura.
Yeah, they could rebook Rosenstrike. We're seeing also Tybura versus Blades, but Blades should honestly just be holding out for a fight with Tom Aspinall. If you're
Yeah, that rematch.
If you're Curtis There's Blades, no right?
Time for that rematch.
Yeah. Otherwise, the thing that's coming up here is the other idea we had was Tybura versus Almeida, which, yeah, I would be fine with that. It would.
Almeida's coming off the loss to Rosenstrike.
Yeah. So he Tybura is no like. What is Tybura? No, and Almeida didn't lose to Rosenstrike. That was Gaziev. Almeida lost to Blades.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
Almeida's still high profile. Nobody cares about Marcin Tybura. That's the right fight to make. That is a fight. Almeida is in need of a rebound. Tybura would be that rebound. Tybura could use a step up. Almeida would be that step up. You know. I'm for it.
I'm not against it. I'm definitely
You're not against it. Yeah. Otherwise, they could rebook the Rosenstrike fight, as you said. Rosenstrike coming off the Gaziev win. Yeah. Other than that, most of the people ranked above Marcin Tybura have already beat Marcin Tybura. Did he? He did beat Sergey Spivak at one point a few years ago, so they could do a Spivak rematch. But yeah,
I'd rather not.
Yeah, I'd rather not either. I don't need to see Spivak Tybura. I don't need to see Volkov Tybura again. I don't need to see. That's pretty much the only people. I mean, Stipe Miocic would never fight him, so that's neither here nor there. And Cyril Gane, Marcin Tybura is not a fight I ever need to see. Really? At all? No, Cyril Gane would absolutely tune Marcin Tybura up.
He's but someone who's patient and won't get sloppy.
Exactly, exactly. So.
Yeah, Rosenstrike, it's interesting because he can be patient and not get sloppy, but he's also a turtle. You put him on his back and he's.
Yeah.
He'll stay there.
Rosenstrike or Almeida, I'm fine with either. All right. That brings us to Brian Battle, Andre Lusa. And we already got one question right off, which was somebody asking, do you think Lusa quit?
Yes, he did.
No. Quit. I mean, he did quit. Technically, because he got fouled and couldn't see, but like that's his right.
It is his right, but he still quit.
Well, yeah, because he couldn't see.
Okay.
Good point, Zane. My point is, if Brian Battle wants to be mad at Andre Lusa, then he should be mad at poking himself for poking him in the eye. You poke a man in the eye, you foul him. That's on you. Sure. That's your mistake.
Sure. 100%. You're right. Yeah. 100% right.
But you also think Andre Lusa bitched out and should have stayed in that fight.
I think he was getting his ass kicked and wanted a way out.
He didn't want to. Brian Battle gave him a foul. Like that is that Brian Battle created that foul. It's not like Andre Lusa put Battle's thumb in his eye. Like
agreed. But yeah. The opportunity arose to get out of the fight, and he took it.
Nah. I think, honestly, this is what I...
you know why, noted... man, you know why I say this? Let me just why? Explain really okay. quickly. If the doctor's checking you out, and you're the guy that says you can't see, you want out. 60 seconds in, you're saying you can't see. When you have 5 minutes to recover, you don't want to recover. You're telling the doctor, I can't see, which is a buzzword. That's a key word that stops the fight in its tracks. You want
it. It is. It is. And fighters should all know that. But
they do. If
Dominic Cruz and Daniel Cormier have proven anything to me over their time in the booth, it is that fighters don't know a whole lot of shit about how this sport works on a regular day-to-day basis. And the thing I think is the real truth here, and this I will cite Eric McGracken, noted Chael Sonnen opponent, Eric McGracken. He had a list of the ABC iPoke standards and the proposed ones that they're talking about changing. And one of the big things is that the doctor should not be asking somebody who has been poked in the eye. The ref should wait at least a minute, if not more, to call the doctor in. They should offer the guy like a towel or something to wipe their eye out and wait at least a minute before bringing the doctor in. And I think
that's dumb.
Why?
What if he's fucking hurt? You're gonna be like, we gotta wait 60 seconds. Like,
well, let's see if it's just something that can be wiped away.
A dumbass arbitrary 60-second thing. Like that could endanger someone's eye and vision for the rest of their life. I think.
Well, then if it could endanger somebody's eye and vision for the rest of their life, then they should always just stop the fight for an eye poke, no matter what, and just. You know, if it's that dangerous and potentially...
I think the doctor should be able to come in at any given point, and there should not be any limitations on that. Like, you have to wait X amount of seconds before a doctor can come in? Like, no.
The other thing is, and this is just a standard practice. I mean, if the ref goes up to the guy and sees that his eye is bloody, then yeah, bring the doctor in. But if the ref goes up to a guy and they're just, you know, Andre Luce's eyes looked to a casual observer fine.
Sure.
You know.
It wasn't swollen closed. For sure.
Yeah, then just like wait.
Visibly gouged.
Yeah, we could see. Then just wait a little to bring the doctor in. And as a standard of practice, not as a requirement, but as a standard of practice. And the other thing that was on this list of potential modifications to the rules was that as a standard of practice, the doctor should also not ask a fighter whether they can see or not until the end of that 5-minute period that they're given. And that is the thing I think is real here. Cause like it's a chaotic situation. Fighters are emotional people. There's all sorts of things going through your head in the middle of a fight. You get poked in the eye.
But I don't think that's what happened here. I think Lusa volunteered the information. He's the one that was like, I can't see. Doctor, I can't see.
Well, I don't know. I feel like maybe that is true. And if that is true, then that's his screw up.
And that's
if he wanted to keep
fighting. That's why I feel like he wanted out of the fight for whatever reason. He wanted out. Whether he really was like, I'm compromised and the fight was already going south. I'm definitely not going to get my win bonus. So a no contest is better than a loss. I don't know.
I think it's just like the chaos of the moment. And Lusa, maybe he either couldn't see and he's just being honest, I can't see, and at that point fine, stop the fight. Mm-hmm. Or he is just like, my vision's blurry and I want to make sure the doctor knows that while he's looking at it, and he forgot that if you say that you're fucked. Either way, I am always going to bank on the side of fighters are not looking for a way out of their fights, because these people, if they didn't want to fight, they would be doing it literally anything else with their lives.
Yeah, but shit changes when you're actually in there.
Yeah, but these aren't guys who are just trying this out for the first time. It's not like he got in here and is like, oh my God, I didn't know fighting would be like this, you know.
But he's like 10-3. Like, it's not like he's had his ass beat that much. Like,
I mean, he trains out of Killcliff. You're saying they're not putting him through the paces out there?
No, I'm saying like he's lost 3 decisions.
And, sure.
This was trending.
But one was to JDM. Like, that fight was hell. I remember that fight. That was a truly back and forth war. Like, the guy has been in hard fights before. It's not like he's just goes out there and quits. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that.
I don't know. It's weird.
Also, who looks at Brian Battle and is like, I don't.
Second. Wait a minute.
What?
Oh, you know what?
What?
Maybe there was like a language barrier.
Exactly. Exactly. This is what I'm saying. These are confusing moments. You know, I'm going to give Lusa the benefit of the doubt on this. Anyway.
although he was ready to fight 30 seconds after that decision.
I mean, once again, these people are fighting is their default status. You don't get into this profession if you're not a thin-skinned weirdo who is ready to throw hands at the drop of a hat, you know?
It was just weird that he told the doctor that he couldn't see.
Yeah, but you know, Johnny Walker told the ref that he didn't know what country he was in. Like,
no, he didn't. He said he was in the desert. He answered the question correctly.
Just saying, let's quiz fighters less is what I'm saying. In the ring, let's quiz fighters.
That's
less.
What I mean. I don't think he was being quizzed at all. I think
the doctor was checking him out. I don't know what was. I have trouble believing the doctor wasn't talking to him at all when he said
he was talking to him and checking him out and wiping his eye. And Lucy was like, "I can't see."
Yeah. Well, who knows? I'm giving Lucy the benefit of the doubt here. All right. Otherwise, for Brian Battle, other than fighting his own anger issues, he will need to. He's willing to get this one back, so they'll probably do this fight again. Because I doubt it's a fight Lusa will turn down.
Even Michael Bisping, with one eye, said Lusa quit and wanted out.
Michael Bisping says all sorts of shit.
I'm just saying, he's the guy with one eye when it comes to eye pokes.
Yeah, well, maybe at some point in Michael Bisping's career, he probably should have said, "Hey, you know, my eye is really injured and I probably shouldn't be fighting anymore."
Well, he would have never became UFC champion of the world.
Hey, I don't know. He didn't go through that much hell against Luke Rockhold to get that knockout.
Bro, he went through hell trying to fool the athletic commissions that whole
time. No, I'm just saying that, like, that fight wasn't particularly hard on the long term scale of Michael Bisping fights where he went through really hard fights, the Luke Rockhold one where he won the title was not an especially hellacious Michael Bisping fight.
That's probably his easiest fight ever.
Yeah. Anyway. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I guess they're probably just going to run this back. That'll be the true test of whether Lusa wanted out is if he takes this fight again.
If I were Battle, I probably wouldn't take the fight again.
Battle, you saw how angry he was. He'll take the fight again. He doesn't have the sense to not take the fight again.
That could be. We'll see. I'm fine with him running it back.
Yeah.
It was explosive. It was fun.
Yeah. Because otherwise, I mean, that's, you know, matchmaking off a card like this is just like, you know, but Brian Battle could face pretty much anybody at this point right now. He's surprisingly, you know, got a pretty decent UFC record going at 5-1. But
yeah, he's been overproducing as of late.
He could fight Michael Morales. He's been on a pretty good run in the welterweight division.
Ooh, that's scary. That's a scary.
You know, thing.
Morales is a monster.
Or, well, Rinat Fakhretdinov already beat him, so there's not. We're not doing that.
Badly, he beat him.
Yeah,
he pantsed him.
Uros, Uros Medic lost to Miktabik Oralbi, and yeah, I don't know. Who else is right in there around that same place as him? Yes, they could, you know, yeah. They could really.
What about like Tim Means?
Dirty Bird is always out there for a good time. He's
a veteran.
Means is coming off a loss right now, I think, isn't he? He's coming off a win over Andre Fiallo. So, yeah, you could do something like that.
Battle Means.
Yeah. Or, you know, put him in there against somebody like Li Jing Liang or something if you really want to test him, you know?
Man.
See what he's
made of. I'm here for that, too.
Yeah. Battle's looking, I will say this, other than the whole goofy post-fight anger fest from Battle, other than all the sour grapes over a man that you fouled,
well, he didn't get his win bonus. You know?
Yeah, well, he shouldn't have fouled the man. You're responsible for your tools, 100%. Brian.
Fact of the matter,
Yeah.
Missed out on a paycheck.
He missed out on a paycheck, but, you know, that's his personal responsibility, Brian. That's the name of the game for you fighters. But
I also think it was a smart move, though, calling out Lusa just to see if he'd come at you, and he did.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, now you're good.
Well,
you couldn't have waited the 5 minutes.
Thin skin fighters and thin skinness, they go together. Like, you call out any fighter at any time, they could be not. Conor McGregor was on the floor with a broken leg, ranting at Dustin Poirier about how he was gonna like you're come for him.
DMs.
Yeah, these men are not masters of context, but anyway. Other than that, I've been really impressed with how good Battle's been looking. Honestly, he's a dude who, coming off a tough, I was like, he'll be gone in a year or two. But he's looked better and better every fight out. And he looked great in this fight. So
he's got a new nickname. He ditched the Pooh Bear.
Yeah, terrible nickname. I got to say, if you're gonna nickname yourself and your last name is something as cool as Battle, you got to work with that, you know?
Yeah, Battle Axe or
something. Yeah, you know, tested for battle or like I don't know. I'm not here. These are all blue sky, and I'm just, you know, throwing some things on the wall here. But the Butcher,
even like Flying Brian Battle would be dope.
Yeah, it's at least something better, but it's just Brian,
well, at least he's got some alliteration.
Yeah, he's got the triple B thing going, but then just
B cubed.
Yeah, there you go. No.
B to the third.
It's bad. All right. That brings us to the old man highlight of the night. Ovince St. Preux gutting out a decision win over Kennedy Nzechukwu. And Kennedy, man, this was a terrible fight. Like, OSP looked he looked shockingly good.
I know. Suspiciously good.
Post-USADA OSP out there throwing volume like he has never before. And he talked about it in the post-fight. He's like, Nzechukwu is bad going backwards. We're going to go forwards. I'm going to go forwards. I'm going to push the pace on him. Smart fight.
Which he never does. Ever.
He never, ever does that.
sus. Total sus.
Yeah. But Nzechukwu too, like, he was out there with some, like, 2008 ass striking, man. Just pure middle distance. I go, you go, take turns. No back foot work, no front foot work, no pressure, no counter, just real classic MMA guy striking until round three, when he figured out what he should have figured out way earlier, which is that, like, no, you really are actually bigger than this guy. You should clinch him up because you do all your best fighting in the clinch and always have. Mm-hmm. And he went out there in the third round and he started clinching OSP up and he started landing a lot of good shots. But it took him getting dropped in that round to figure that out. So.
I still didn't give him the third.
Yeah.
It was really close.
It was close.
Were really close.
They were all close. I thought that he might have snuck it out, I think. I thought he might have snuck it out, but I didn't care. It was not a fight I was going to be like, oh, OSP clearly shouldn't have won this. No, OSP, I'm fine with him getting this win.
When it's that close, you got to give it to the old guy.
Yeah, you got to give it to, that's a rule. All old men should be respected.
Yes. It's almost like the champion's nod, you know?
Yeah. And with that being said, do we have another old man for OSP to fight? Oh, is Alexander Gustafsson still in the UFC? Because
I thought he's done retired like seven times.
He has retired seven times. But I would watch, if OSP is going to keep fighting, somehow OSP and Gustafsson have never fought. That is actually a fight I would watch.
I'd watch it, but I just cannot for the life of me see Gustafson coming back.
No, I can't either, really. But I'm just trying to think of something. Something that would be like worth any kind of time at all. And that's about it. That's all I got. Otherwise, I don't need to see. I don't care.
He could go back up to heavyweight.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know. I'm never excited to see him.
We've got an actual doctor here, so I'm going to front this really quick. Very fair. And this is also why ringside doctors often feel like shyster doctors, because if they were real, like, I care about my patients medical professionals and not I want to keep this fight going medical professionals, they would probably be stopping a lot more fights too.
No, it's fair.
Yeah.
That is absolutely fair. Especially some of those cuts, some of those hematomas.
All right. I'll bring us to a featherweight bout. Christian Rodriguez, Isaac Dolgarian. And man, Dolgarian had me feeling great for a minute because I picked him to win this. Eddie, he's getting the...
Yeah, I picked Rodriguez here, but I tell you what, I thought this was a robbery. I thought Dolgarian won.
I had it 29-28 Dolgarian at the end of it. I have no problem. No, I had it 28-27 Dolgarian at the end of it.
Yeah.
I have no problem with 28-27 Rodriguez because he did land the bigger shots in round two. He got controlled.
Nah,
the
differential was like three.
It wasn't huge. It's
negligible to the point where you got to go to the other criteria.
I just think that the shots he landed were a little better.
8-5.
Like, I'm not saying there were more of them. I just thought they were better. I could see.
It's 8-5.
I know. I'm not hanging my hat on it. I scored it for Dolgarian too. I'm just saying I'm not going to feel bad about it because Dolgarian fell the fuck apart. And if you're going to fall down like that, you've got to take the possibility that you're going to lose that fight. If you are going to crumble to that extent, you have to understand you might lose. Like, you got 10-8 in round three. You can't get 10-8 in a third round. Even if he'd won, if he'd been happy with that performance, I would be a little bit like, your coach should probably pull you aside and be like, that's a loss. Two paychecks. I would
have been fine with a draw.
Yeah.
But I can't see giving that second round to Rodriguez. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw some other people saying they couldn't see giving it to Dolgarian. I agree. I think it should have been his, but big thing is Dolgarian learned the lesson that we all wondered, would he have to learn? Because he's only been finishing people in first rounds, and it turns out he was not pacing himself for a three-round fight.
Yeah.
So he learned that lesson today. And also, this is a man who has never had to go hard striking rounds in practice where he's not allowed to wrestle, and his coach should probably build that into his curriculum, because nothing about the way Isaac Dolgarian strikes is set to survive in a striking only situation.
But he did survive.
Yeah, he's got heart. Dude has.
I'm shocked he didn't get finished. Honestly, yeah. The ref probably could have stopped it in that third round on a couple occasions. Like, your belly down, shelling.
Yeah, dude.
Probably stop the fight. Like, we just had the doctor on here.
Yeah.
He would probably like stop the fight. That was but I'm glad the ref let it go.
Yeah, Dolgarian learned a lesson, and Rodriguez continues to be that dude who is sneaky good. You have a prospect that you think is gonna be the next big thing.
Yeah.
Do not fight Christian Rodriguez, because he's not the fastest dude. He's not the most dynamic dude, but he is tough as hell.
He might be the prospect.
Yeah. Exactly. He is tough as hell, and he knows how to fight in every situation. That dude is insanely comfortable in every situation to a degree that
the sport in him.
Yeah. A lot of young guys.
This is him up at featherweight. So yeah. I'm curious to see if he'll go back down to 35.
I don't know. He missed weight twice in a row at 135. I don't. If he can't, if that's not a training problem, then there's no future for him in that division. And if it is a training problem, then great. You just got to train harder and you got to get on a real diet. But because he's not big, he's only like 5'7". But
right. The truth is, he got controlled a lot in this fight.
Yeah, but he did not look smaller than Dolgarian at all. Dolgarian's 5'7", too. And Rodriguez looked like he had more. He had a bigger torso. Dolgarian is more fit and lean and is just a great wrestler, really great wrestler. But Rodriguez, you know, he still looked like a guy who would probably struggle to go back to 135.
Yeah.
So still, though, I love what I see out of Rodriguez technically out there. Like, he is just the dude knows how to fight. You know,
he's got answers everywhere.
He's got answers everywhere. Let's see. Is there anybody out there I especially want to see him fight next? Got to look at this.
Well, it's hard to say what division he's going to be in.
Yeah. Assuming he's in the featherweight division. I mean, I you know. Alex Caceres is coming off a loss because that is the kind of fight that I would not at all mind seeing. Although, you know who's not and would be, it'd be stupid fun.
Darren Elkins?
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, Darren
Elkins is coming off a win.
Simpatico.
Yeah. Why not, you know? Or Nathaniel Wood took a loss recently that was a shocker to me. I would not
at
all.
You already got me high on Darren Elkins.
All right, all right.
You telepathically sent it to me.
All right, yeah. Let's do it. Okay. After that, Macy Chasen, Pani Khienzad. This was was Mick Maynard just picking names out of a hat? How did we come back to this rematch of a dominant first fight? We did not need to see it again. It did not go differently. What was the point here?
I don't know.
It was fun. They scrapped. They threw down. But we ran back a fight that was not at all controversial and got the exact same result. Good times.
Maybe just to get it in the UFC.
Oh, that was in the UFC. Yeah, it was a tough finale the first time they did it.
Victor for some reason.
It was a tough finale. Like, I'm sure Pani wanted it back, but what, you know? Why this?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that women's bantamweight division has still literally never recovered from Ronda Rousey retiring. Honestly. Like,
I think it was, what are you talking about? Amanda Nunes took over.
Amanda Nunes took over and beat all the dregs that were around when Ronda Rousey was still champ and dominated it and retired. And now you really see after Amanda Nunes left, man, they really did nothing to build that division after Ronda Rousey left because there is nothing underneath Amanda Nunes ready.
Bro, it wasn't even built when Ronda was there. What do you mean?
That's what I'm saying. Like, they brought in like Holly Holm and Misha Tate and, like, you know, they brought in a whole bunch of people. Amanda Nunes, you know, they brought in a class of people
going around out of top 15.
They brought in a class of people to compete with her, and since then they've never found a class of people to create new competition. They brought in, you know,
that look at like who's ranked. Like there's just not a lot of great exceptional talent out there. Or if they are, they haven't been discovered.
That's what I'm saying. Is that whether there is or not, the UFC is not like Ronda. All their plan was around Ronda Rousey being around for a long time, and then she up and ran off, and they were just like, "Yeah, okay, we don't really care." You know.
But I mean, all they did was bring over the Strikeforce fighters.
Yeah, and that was a great plan.
Honestly, y'all that was crediting Scott Coker.
That was a great plan. The UFC did a good job bringing over the Strikeforce fighters, and they've never done a good job since. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's probably a Scott Coker thing. Scott Coker is much better; has always been much better at building divisions.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC's done a good job on women's flyweight and bantam and strawweight, in my opinion. You know.
Yeah, bantamweight though.
Bantamweight just yeah.
The wasteland.
It is. So. That Macy Chasen versus Panny Quintad was just kind of a reminder of that because they're both ranked. And this was a fight we didn't need to see again, and it happened. And Panny Quintad was ranked 6th.
Maybe that's why they did it.
Yeah, I guess. Guess now Panny Quintad can fight Misha Tate? Or, no, I mean, Macy Chasen can fight Misha Tate? I don't know.
Sure,
whatever. Weird rematch. For that, GM3, Gerald Meerschaert, Brian Barberena, and
second tech sub of the night.
Yeah.
I love me a tech sub.
Love a tech sub. And this was, you know, a pretty decent fight. Barberena got to have his fight for a while. Got to be busy, land some good strikes, won the first round, I think. Maybe not.
Maybe.
But
clunky first round, for sure.
Yeah, it was fine. But he just can't wrestle, and eventually that was poison against Gerald Meerschaert.
A lot of cool submissions on the night.
Yeah.
Chasson was one of my favorites, the way she hit her hands.
Yeah.
And Kinzad was just like trying to search for him and couldn't find him.
Everything she wants. Yeah. That was great. This over the jaw, just crushing it. Loved it. And the post fight speech where Bisping's like, what's next? He's like, a beer and a nap.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
One more for the old guys.
Yeah. You don't have a name ready. That's all I want to hear. I don't need to hear anybody. Just be like, you know, I'm going fishing, having a beer, taking a nap, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
Great. Love to see it.
I'm actually surprised we ain't seen this one yet.
Yeah. Well, as one of our people in the chat has said, Barberena is not a middleweight.
He tried. It looked like he was hitting the weights. It looked like he was taking full advantage of the lack of USADA.
Hitting the
press, doing the curls, getting the beach muscles.
Well, it's Brian Barberena. If he's going to a beach, it's only to drive a dirt bike around it, you know.
Well, he's working on his muscles.
Yeah, he's looking thicker, but he's not a middleweight. He's just not.
100%.
And he's getting pushed around by bigger dudes. So, all right. Other than that, earlier on the prelims, Mike Davis, Natan Levy, and I was talking a lot this week about how really feels like Mike Davis should be a lot further on in his career at this point. Like he's a pretty good fighter, and he hits hard. He's got good boxing technique. He's been improving a lot in his wrestling and his grappling. All of that showed up here against Natan Levy. And then afterward, now I know why he's not further in his career, because just turns out he doesn't really like fighting. And this isn't what he wants to do with his life.
It is, but it isn't.
Like, it is what he's doing with his life. But he made it pretty clear. He's like, this is not who I am. This is not like what I want to do or what I like to do. I'm just good at it, so I'm doing it.
Which is nothing new, right? We've seen this before. I think like the Diaz brothers were really big on that, especially Nick Diaz.
Yeah, I mean, especially Nick.
He was always vocal about just hating fighting, like loving it, but hating it, like never liking to hurt people. Although his style was very much so, I'm coming after you and we're fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Diazes were all, it's always been kind of a weird thing with them. It's like, if we're gonna fight, this is a fight. I am treating you like my enemy, and we are fighting for real.
To the point of feeling disrespected if you fight back the same way.
Yeah, yeah. It was very much like, I don't like doing this, but if we're doing this, we are fighting. And Rampage Jackson was often that way too. He'd talk about like, I don't like to fight. It's not really what I want to do. I don't enjoy it.
I think it's a lot more common than you might think.
Yeah, but it is for with Davis, it really puts a point on like why he only seems to fight once every year and a half. It's like basically he gets to a point where financially he needs to do it, and so he does it, and then he goes and does other stuff the rest of the time.
Yeah. I get it, man. Hurting people sucks.
Because, like, yeah, they even, like, you know, what's your call out? And he's like, call out Vince Pichel. Who calls out Vince Pichel?
Come on. Clay Guida.
Yeah. And Jim Miller. Like, Jim Miller, Patty Pimblett, sure, that's everybody's answer because they couldn't think of something. But if you're calling, he really, like, this is not a man who is caring about who he's fighting next if you're calling out Vince Pichel.
No, he's such a talent, though.
He is. That's the thing. Like, the tools are there. The skill is there. Just doesn't care about it. So, you know, probably never going to be as good a fighter as he could have been because doesn't want to do it.
Yeah. Honestly, isn't that what Khamzat's kind of struggling with right now?
Yeah, does actually seem that way.
He doesn't want to hurt people. Honestly, that was a big reason why I never wanted to become a fighter. Like, I don't want to fucking hurt people. I don't want that on my conscience.
Me, my thing, I loved boxing and, like, you know, getting out and, like, putting gloves on with my friends and going and, like, doing rounds and stuff and just sparring and all that growing up. For me, it was always, I just like my teeth. I really like my teeth, and I don't want to lose them.
Yeah, I'm just afraid of hurting someone. Like,
I'm not afraid of that. That was never my problem. It's more like I don't have enough sense of self-preservation to stop myself from like getting really hurt, you know.
Like, you wouldn't just take a knee or something?
No.
you're saying you'd it's go fun. Out on your shield.
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun. It's such a rush to like go out there and like, you know, spar with people and all that. But like, I was also like, wow, this would be a problem for me if I actually wanted to like do this.
I mean, even winning my MMA fight was one of the biggest highs I've ever had.
Yeah.
But like the whole time, like I never wanted to hurt my opponent and like, you know.
Yeah, that's always crazy to me.
And super cool with them after. And
yeah, that's always a little crazy to me when I hear that from other fighters. Like, there are high level pros who are like, I'm not out here wanting to hurt people. I, you know, don't want my, like, bro, you are in the wrong business. Like,
hurt business.
Yeah. It is the, you are hurting this person business. There is no two ways about it. You know?
Yeah.
I'm much more in tune with Ariane Lipsky when she's on that knee bar and she's pulling it like she's riding a damn jet ski. Like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, okay. That's it. You know? Yeah.
If you go watch my fight, I stop it myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The second I realized it was done, I'm like, it's fucking done. Like, I got no need to hurt anybody.
Yeah, no. Anyway. Let's see. Before that, Chelsea Chandler, Josiane Nunez.
And this is what you're saying about the bantamweight division being total trash. These fighters are ranked. This is not a UFC caliber fight. It's not.
No. It's, I mean, I hate to say this because Nick and Nate, you know, I've never been Diaz Army crazy. But I got respect for the Diazes and their sort of very Bushido approach to MMA, and you know, it's almost a very like samurai thing of like, oh, I hate this, but I'm gonna live like this if I'm doing it kind of thing. Of like, you know,
well, it's like a bravado thing.
You, that too.
It's more of a street code than the same.
Yeah,
code.
Yeah. But Caesar Gracie Jiu-Jitsu camp, do they train people there? Or is just like everybody just hang out and watch Nick and Nate Diaz and like,
oh, come on now.
Practice their mean mug.
Come on now, Zane.
No, because Chris Avila, Chelsea Chandler, what are they teaching? What is somebody at that camp teaching Chelsea Chandler? Because it is not wrestling or grappling or striking, as far as I can
tell. Track and field.
Track and field and mean mug.
And meme making.
Yeah.
She memed herself again. She did the sprint again. The Chandler.
She did. Yeah.
The Chandler dash.
Yeah. Like she won this fight for the reasons I thought she'd win this fight, because Josiane Nunez at 5'2", there are straw weights bigger than her. She is fighting at bantamweight purely out of, that is a pure hubris move of like, no, I can beat these bigger fighters. I don't care. I don't want to cut weight. I'm not gonna.
She should have zero hubris. I don't like watching her fight. It's hard to watch. It looks like she doesn't like it, and it almost feels like abuse at points. The fact that she fucking won is mind-boggling.
No. I'm talking Nunez. Nunez is 5'2". That's pure hubris. Yeah. Is the only reason she fights at bantamweight.
Yeah. But I mean,
but Chandler, she is out there. I mean, she's a bantamweight. She's barely even a bantamweight. She missed weight. She's a featherweight. But yeah, she just, to me, it's just like, I don't understand what whatever manager she has or coaches she has that are like, yeah, sign this contract to go fight people professionally. They're doing her a disservice because they are not preparing her for these fights before she takes them. Like,
yeah, she's 6-2. That's insane. Like, how's she winning these fights?
She had mount on Nunez and just like stood up and just started losing a striking exchange again immediately. I don't know what is this? Like, I don't understand it.
I wonder if she's like related to Dana White or something. I need a real answer.
Yeah.
She's not UFC material.
No, Nunez just needs to go down a couple divisions and she could compete. She can be fine, potentially.
Yeah, Chandler needs to learn how to fight.
Yeah.
like she fucking won, right? Like,
yeah. But there is no part of this game that seems to be in her control. Like, it is just all she's got the aggression part down.
And the dog in her.
Yeah, she's got the dog in her. Clearly, there's something to work with at a base level, but it just seems like nothing has been worked with. Like, she shows up one week.
It could be like, maybe she does the pad porn and she looks fucking great in the gym. And then
I doubt it. I doubt it.
And it's completely, I don't know.
I would be less surprised if she were just literally entering the gym for the first time all year when she signs the contract, then she's like, oh, I better start going back to training again. And she's in camp
teaching in the meantime.
Yeah, exactly. And she's in camp only when she's preparing for a fight. That's the only time she's training. And then she takes the fight. Like, that would be less surprising to me than her being some gym class hero, you know?
Yeah, I hate watching it though.
Yeah, it's weird. All right. For that, Jafel Filho, Ode Osborne, and
signed after 5 fights.
Yeah, like they are finally trying to build the women's bantamweight division by just signing every single person that they can, which is what they have to do at some point if you're going to build. you have to just sign everybody. But they should have been doing that for a lot longer than they were. And they should be a lot further along in that process where they don't have to do that anymore. You know?
It's a barren wasteland.
Yeah. It really... They need to go back to propping up Invicta more. Invicta's great. Go back to, like, just keep... Dump money into... Dump whatever spare... UFC makes enough. Doesn't take that much. Just, like... What, $1 million a year will run all of Invicta easily? You know, just keep it running so that they can get all of the Chelsea Chandlers. And
their market share is already pretty large, and they got this antitrust lawsuit going on, so I don't think they're about to dump any money into anything.
Yeah.
Speaking, as far as buying up
companies. Not buying it, just funding it. That's all I'm saying. Beneficial, be a benefactor, Dana White. Just go out there, splash the money around, don't own it, take no interest, say I will not own any part of the property. Just help keep women's MMA running at the regional level. Anyway, Jafel Filho, Ode Osborne. Filho is, you know, defensively totally reckless, but offensively, man, is a problem. He will go out there and put it on you.
This was a flawless victory.
Yeah. Love seeing a fighter who can fight from mount, who knows how to work mount. Because there are a lot of dudes out there. We saw it. There were a couple fighters on this card. Chelsea Chandler, there was somebody else too. They just like had mount and gave it, like got swept immediately. Jafel Filho, he knew exactly how to punish Ode Osborne from mount and to make that
flyweight.
Yeah. In a scrambler's division. Like that dude had that position locked. So,
yeah, he's one of the most dangerous grapplers at 125. Mm-hmm. Maybe top five.
Sure. You know, dude is just, he's powerful. He's dangerous. Like I say, defensively, totally reckless, but the dude knows how to.
He's so cavalier with his.
Yeah. He's strong and he knows how to lock people down, and love to see it. All right. For that, Danny Silva, Joshua Coulibaly. Really impressed by Danny Silva, honestly. Coulibaly is a fighter that I always love to watch. He's not that great athletic, but he is a good planner. He is crafty. He knows how to make things happen. And Silva just went out there and put a pace on him and kept the pace on him. You know?
Yeah, that was exhausting.
Yeah.
And them calf kicks were no joke.
Yeah.
Man, he's a hoss, dude.
Yeah, I was impressed.
I'm glad the judges got it right. Also, this was a split decision. I didn't feel like Coulibaly did enough to win.
I was pulling for Coulibaly. I wanted him to win, but you know, Danny Silva showed up. He showed up in that fight. I love to see it. I'm always happy to see a prospect who can go out there and show something new. Because on the Contender Series, he started out with that kind of pace and he gassed, and the whole rest of the fight was just a desperate push to the final bell. Barely squeaked it out. This was much like a better class of fighter, and he carried himself much better all the way through.
Yeah, it was a great fight.
Yeah, really fun. For that, Jacqueline Amarim, Corey McKenna, and you know, I thought McKenna could win this fight from top position if she needed to.
Really?
Potentially. Amarim, like, she lost to Sam Hughes off her back. She's a great grappler, but I don't, you know, I figured if she didn't get it done immediately, she'd just gas the way she has in her other fights. Even out grappling Montserrat Ruiz was able to sweep her a couple times. Mm-hmm. And she didn't ever submit her. Like, I was willing to give McKenna that benefit of the doubt.
I wasn't.
But you weren't.
No.
Fair enough.
And I'm pretty sure that Amarim got three submissions tonight.
She did get like three.
At least and two.
Corey McKenna has got to be, he's going to be kicking herself for probably the next year saying, damn, I should not have jumped into her guard. I could have just kept this.
And that's the thing is you catch someone's kick, you don't always have to chase them down to the ground, even if it's natural.
Oh, we got a question. Bonuses. There was no fight of the night. Performance of the night. Marcin Tybura, Macy Chasen, Jafel Filho, and Jacqueline Amarim. So, hey, you know, you get three submissions in one fight. Yeah, probably should get a performance bonus.
You should get three performance bonuses.
Yeah. I would have given
Mike Beltran got lucky as fuck that Amarim was able to shake down that arm and finish.
Yeah, because he screwed up bad on that.
You can't tell someone to stop and restart a fight like that.
And this is after that Chirez fight a couple months ago where it was Beltran who against Lacerda who stopped it in the mid guillotine.
Yeah, yeah.
So and he's already
Beltran, wasn't it, who brought the doctor in immediately to check on the eye of the
He's getting a little overly cautious lately.
Yeah,
I probably would have liked to see Mearshart get a bonus for that sub.
Oh my God, how did he not?
You
sub through the chin.
I would say that over Marcin Tybura. You know.
I mean, why does it have to be one or the other?
True. Everybody you get. I mean, I still think that the UFC, if they really want to just reward finishes, they should just give bonuses for finishes. And, you know.
Well, I think there should be finish bonuses and no win bonuses.
That would also be good. Bonus system. The whole win, you know, show win thing is fucked up from the get-go. Anyway. Otherwise, Thiago Moises, Mitch Ramirez, this was, you know, if Silva made the best out of taking a big step up from the contender series, Mitch Ramirez took a huge step up off of the regionals, and Thiago Moises made him pay for it.
Yeah, well, it was short notice.
So yeah.
You kind of have to... When fights like this show up, you really have to accept. But I will say I am impressed that Ramirez was able to fight out of those ground positions.
Yeah.
He was in some really hot water. He might have been mounted at one point and got out of it.
I will say it was a month's notice. So it wasn't that short a notice.
4 weeks for Thiago Moises.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a huge step up.
That's tough, man.
No matter what.
That is tough. But I love the fucking finish. You got the jiu-jitsu guy taking you out with leg kicks, dropping you with a leg kick, and rolling up on you like Cowboy Cerrone did Miles Jerry, and just fucking spamming leg soccer kicks to the leg.
And also, this didn't get a performance of the night bonus?
That's insane. This was cool as fuck.
It was. Leg kick TKOs. The leg kick TKOs rule.
The coolest leg kick TKO I've ever seen. The coolest.
It was great. Yeah.
That was like a complete, like, you don't belong in here with me, son.
Yeah. All right. And finally on the night, Chad Anhelger, Charlampos, Gregoriou. Love to see it for Anhelger, you know? Yeah. Dude, he is a small camp, out of nowhere, scrapper, no kind of athlete, in one of the hardest divisions to be that dude in. So anytime he can go out there and be that dude, I love to see it.
I actually did a podcast today with one of his teammates, Rose Athena, and we actually talked about that and how he's just one of the hardest workers ever. And it's he's not going to be the most athletic or necessarily the most skilled, but he's got that dog in him and he doesn't quit. And I loved this fight for him. I loved the way he stayed calm under duress. He was always, he looked like such a veteran against someone who just isn't there yet. And just had answers for everything and fought off the takedowns and just let his hands go.
Yep. Gregoriou coming. I mean, it's a good camp he's coming out of, but he had a thing, you know, watching his regional footage, even though I picked him going into this, it's like, man, he really just kind of is like this one shot at a time power striker. And Anheliger, the big thing he did in this fight is the low kicks and a pawing jab, even if it wasn't like a real deft, technical, like, oh, stick you with it jab, he kept something in Gregoriou's face all the time. And that amount of activity, Gregoriou was not ready to match it at all. And you could tell he was pretty quickly overwhelmed just by the amount of inputs.
It also kept him in his rhythm.
Yeah.
Keeping that out there, keeping it out there. And then he can build off it when he needed to. Such a savvy veteran performance here.
Yep. Love to see it from Anheliger. All right. On that note, we're going to wrap things up. We'll come back at you with a little bonus content for those of you subscribing to our Substack.
To access the bonus content of this episode, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to themmadrawpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.